Our next guest is an adult entertainer who has performed in pornography for the past 12 years. He currently works as the creative director at the adult film website kink.com and has written about his experience in the industry extensively. Mickey Mod, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So I really want to start out talking about how you got involved in the adult film and pornography industry. So how did you first start out?
Well, the short story is Craigslist. There was a posting from a company looking for male models to be in adult entertainment. And at the time, I was just looking to explore a lot of facets of my sexuality. And not being in a relationship, I thought that that might be an opportunity to create some fantasy situations in a kind of sober, witnessed environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it started. And I really enjoyed it. And I kept doing it. And I've been doing it for a little over 12 years now.
When you told your family and friends this is the career that you were like looking into, what was their reaction?
You know, it took me a while to kind of talk to my family about that. I think for most people, our kind of personal sexual exploration is something that's kind of like very private and very internalized. And takes just a long time to kind of reconcile within yourself. You know, I'm fortunate enough to have a family that was like very understanding, and some of them find it like really funny. Like my mom is had a long career in like mental health. So her perspective was, like I said, I'm very lucky. Her perspective was very open and loving, and she had a lot of questions, mostly kind of concerned for health and kind of safety standards. And just, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have a family who really values individual exploration and saw that as a way to kind of own my own truth.
Mm-hmm.
Although that has not been the case for so many people that I know, and has not been the case for my partner's family, there are a lot of ways that it's difficult. And nobody's story is kind of, there's no like one story that like fits all the experience of all sex workers. So
I guess I'm also curious about, you just mentioned your partner, and I'm curious about how this, you know, having sex on camera, how does that affect your dating life? And was it difficult for you to find partners who were accepting of your line of work?
You know, I think with, like, for example, for people who are musicians, and there's like the sort of like rock star sort of thing that people get like really excited about. And I think it just in dating in general, you present kind of like a narrative of who you think someone is, and then the kind of reality kind of sets in, and then you have to deal with things differently. You know, through dating and when I met my wife, I was very clear up front, like, this is what I do. I'm not planning on leaving it anytime soon. This is a part of my life, and I plan on continuing to do this. And, you know, that was the start. You know, we have to have, just as any relationship and any non-monogamous relationship, there's constant negotiation, there's constant conversation, there's constant checking in, which should be a part of like monogamous relationships as well. Mm-hmm. Like there is, you know, there are things that you have to discuss in order for relationships to move forward and for people to grow. You know, we've gotten to the point where the work that I do is work, you know, and there are different emotions wrapped into that, as anyone who is in a performance environment knows. Like sometimes you work with your body, and that also includes your emotion. That also includes the type of relationships that you make with the people that you perform with.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that there is kind of a difference between your work environment and your personal environment, and having healthy boundaries around that is something that, you know, me and my partner or partners that I've had have worked very hard to establish.
Yeah, I think that it's so interesting that porn is something that statistically most everyone is watching, but nobody is talking about really.
Yeah.
And I've seen you write a lot about being a black man in porn and the racist stereotypes that porn can perpetuate. How is blackness generally portrayed in pornography?
You know, I can only speak for my own experience and the other performers around me, their shared experiences. When we kind of start to have these conversations of like, how does porn portray this and how does porn portray that? I think oftentimes people want to think of porn as a monolith and that like what, you know, happens in one group is the same all around, and it's not. I will say that like what happens in porn is kind of a caricature of the much larger society.
Yeah.
So if there are issues of like racism in porn, it's not because like porn is choosing to do that. It's because we live in America and we have serious issues with like institutionalized racism, and that filters in through all institutions, entertainment.
Yeah. And into our sexual fantasies too.
Yeah. And I definitely feel that like, you know, when I say porn is a caricature, that there is, because of a lack of kind of critical critique outside of that industry, because people don't want to talk about sexuality, porn can do certain things that other entertainment genres are not able to do. It's always kind of, well, that's porn, so it doesn't matter. And I think that that has like an extremely negative impact on how we kind of critique like representations. You know, I will say, just like there is in like mainstream Hollywood, there are limited roles for people of color, and there are limited like ideas and notions of what people of color are capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just in adult entertainment, but that, you know, that filters into adult entertainment, that filters into, you know, the roles that are available or the types of characters that you see over and over, or the way that people's careers are structured around the concept of like interracial, which is generally in the adult entertainment community around a product that is for an audience that is largely not people of color, that is around an experience of a white person with another person of color. And, you know, I think when we kind of start talking about like ethical porn, I think one of the things that we're talking about is an acknowledgement that there are a greater audience than a kind of cis hetero, mostly male audience. And that needs to be represented. And there are a lot of people who are doing that, but it also needs to be, you know, when we talk about inclusion and diversity, I think the best way I've kind of heard it put is that, you know, diversity is inviting me to the party, but inclusion is making sure that like there's music that I want to hear and that there's food that like I like also being served at that party. And there's a lot of talk about what direction porn needs to move into, and inclusion and diversity is absolutely a part of that, and that we, you know, see a lot of people making moves towards.
So let's get into ethical porn a little bit. When I first looked into making this series, I looked into director Erica Lust, who is one of the biggest independent pornography directors. And I know that you've worked with her before in the past. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me a little bit about ethical porn and what makes porn ethical?
I think what makes porn ethical is the same thing that makes food ethical. Right. When you're having this conversation, to use that food analogy between like, you know, McDonald's and like kind of fine dining experience, you talk about what the supply chain is and you talk about like the processes involved. Are, you know, performers being treated well? Do people have all the information that they need in order to kind of create the product that is being asked to be created? Are people understanding of how a product is going to be marketed, how they're going to be represented? Do they have a say in, you know, are they able to make sure that their rates that they're getting paid are being negotiated properly and they feel that they're being adequately compensated for their time? There are people who, you know, will use the term ethical porn about their own products, but I feel like there are other people who are making things ethically that may not use that term. And I think there's sometimes a kind of very limited view of the types of content that are seen as like ethical, that it has to be, you know, like the nature of the content has to be kind of like on the softer side or the high production value. But, you know, I think that there's a range within that. And I think that there's a range of fantasies that can be explored within that. But when we're talking about ethically producing content, we're talking about good business practice. We're talking about like making sure that people are treated well, from like, you know, from the crew to the performer to the customer at home who's consuming that. It was one thing that I do enjoy that Erica Lust does is they take a lot of like submitted fantasies from their community of, and then try to kind of recreate that. You know, I think that's one way that you can kind of like encourage, you know, a dialogue about sexuality that we don't have a whole lot of places to have. I think most people have a concept of tube pornography, like Pornhub, for example. You know, Pornhub has kind of started on pirated content. And a lot of times that content is not supplied by like the production company or the performer itself. It is changing, and tube sites like Pornhub are, you're seeing more kind of directly performer generated content and more higher quality content from the production companies themselves. But, you know, when we say something like Pornhub is kind of like mainstream porn, I have an issue with that because it is kind of like a user-generated content base, which oftentimes is stolen content.
Right.
Porn doesn't have the sort of lobbying groups that, like, say, the music industry has, like when, you know, people were kind of pirating, and or the entertainment industry when people are torrenting content, to kind of go off after those people and say, like, hey, like, this is copyrighted content. That money needs to go to the companies and therefore the performers, you know, who are kind of creating that. And I, you know, my personal belief is that if you're consuming free tube site content, like, you really need to understand that that actually puts performers at risk. That actually causes situations where companies are not able to provide rates at a certain level to adequately meet performers' financial needs. And decisions get made around that. And I think that's just kind of, when we talk about exploitation, I think we understand that sex work is labor and that all labor under capitalism is a form of expectation. There's just a really persistent and insidious narrative that sex work is inherently like more exploitative than any other sort of work.
And it feels almost exploitative because on these tube sites, nobody is paying. They have no financial stake in what they're watching. So I'm curious, do you think people should pay for their porn always?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think unless a production company or a performer is choosing to give away that content for free, absolutely. I think it's an incredibly vulnerable thing that we do as performers. And, you know, it is work. And most people expect to be compensated for their work, whether you work in fast food or whether you work in the adult entertainment industry. The stigma that what we do as workers doesn't count, you know, drives that push to give away and steal content.
Yeah. Do you think that the shame about sex that we have in our culture is also what keeps people from paying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, yeah, I think that if you even have, you know, like a porn site show up on your credit card, you know, some people might feel shame about that. And I think it just speaks to our society's greater intolerance of porn and sex work in general. But it's interesting because the shame keeps us consuming it.
Yeah. I mean, there's kind of a delicate relationship with shame. I mean, adult industry, like anyone kind of who kind of works behind the scenes and kind of has an idea of kind of like the financial side of it, understands that porn is seen as kind of like a high fraud risk by like credit card companies and other financial processors because of that sort of shame of like people buying a membership and then a couple days later having, you know, buyer's remorse and then canceling or saying that like, oh, you know, that was identity theft.
Yeah.
When people have a hard time kind of reconciling their own shame. You know, I think especially coming from like the kind of BDSM community background that I have, like shame is something that you are kind of like always dealing with. You're always in a way kind of creating a place for people to kind of explore that or creating a place where people can set their boundaries around that. You know, I wonder in a world without sexual shame and sexual stigma, like would there be a need for pornography to kind of be at the level that it is in terms of like how people are compensated for the content and the amount of content that is created.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are some common misconceptions that people have about adult film actors and sex workers in general?
I think first and foremost, there's just a general misunderstanding about the amount of work that goes into it. I think people who do acting, people who do modeling, people who do anytime that you kind of make yourself a product, make yourself a brand, there's a lot of work that goes into it, whether that's marketing, public relations, a lot of just kind of like digital design work that kind of goes into video editing. All of these things take a considerable amount of time. You know, the choice to or the thought that sex work is like easy, quick money on the pornography end, I think is something that is, I think just in general, like it does take a lot of work. It does, you know, take a lot of effort and there's a lot of psychological work that happens because you're given the impression that most people will not understand, tolerate that will think of you that you are only doing this because, like, you have no other options, or even if that is your choice because you feel that, like, these are the options that you have, I think we fail to kind of look at the reason that we have people who are having to, like, make these choices is because of the system that we live in. The fact that we don't provide adequate education system, the fact that we put people in situations where, you know, through capitalism are in kind of dire straits in order to make a living, that we do not provide adequate jobs for people who've been through the prison industrial complex, the fact that we are just not really honest about the type of labor that we can create a place for in this society. And, you know, as creative director over at kink.com, I, you know, happen to kind of like work for a CEO who she has kind of a vision about kind of like a larger goal of kind of like changing audiences and kind of creating just more content that is just more diverse.
How have you seen the industry change over your tenure in it? And what kind of changes do you hope to see in the future going forward?
I mean, I've seen a lot of changes, and I think one of the biggest changes recently is, I think, the movement of kind of technologies that are able to kind of better connect audience directly with performers, and performers able to make their own content, kind of like sites like OnlyFans and Minivids that allow performers to create their content, usually kind of like on a trade basis where, you know, two or more performers will get together and say like, hey, we're not taking any money up front. We're going to collaborate on some content product, and we are going to kind of distribute those on those platforms, and we're going to get, you know, a percentage of money from that that goes directly into our pockets and is kind of a lifetime revenue thing. And I think when you have that system that kind of gets away from that studio system, so to speak, performers are able to make better choices around how they work and who they work with, rather than being kind of like, you know, paired in situations or narratives that they may not, you know, fully agree with, but are, you know, supporting because of the financial incentive. We're seeing kind of like a change in that direction. I find that to be a really exciting time because we're seeing, you know, different content. We're seeing different performers that are not considered to be the traditional, more kind of what is thought of as a adult performer. There's just so much variation and so much representation of just kind of like the spectrum of human sexuality. And I really think that that is kind of the most important change that I've seen in my time, and the most exciting change I've seen.
So recently, SESTA and FOSTA, which are two laws, one of them, SESTA stands for Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers Act. SESTA and FOSTA have notoriously been very bad for sex workers on the internet. How do these laws that are newly implemented, how do they affect sex workers on the internet, and do they make it more dangerous?
It's always a dangerous world for sex workers. Let's just start off with that, even like prior to SESTA and FOSTA. But I think when SESTA and FOSTA came up, so much, I think, happens with the way that people are able to connect with each other, keep each other safe. For online sex workers, you know, SESTA and FOSTA has kind of been this kind of nightmare situation of like how things are being conflated with sex trafficking and sex work, you know, and those are very, very different things. And sex trafficking is something that we do need to take seriously. And human trafficking is something that we do need to take seriously. But sex work does not equal sex trafficking.
Yeah.
And I think when you enact legislation like SESTA and FOSTA, we need to be really careful and really surgical of how we kind of craft things to go after something that is absolutely horrible, but also kind of make a place that we're not going after people who are choosing to do sex work. We need to be really, really clear and involve people who are doing these work about what their needs are, what their community needs are. I know that a lot of pornography companies, a lot of adult entertainment companies have kind of taken away things like their forums because they don't want to be accused of facilitating trafficking in certain ways when they can't moderate their online communities. And I think when you remove spaces for online communities and you see larger tech companies kind of following suit where they are shutting down any sort of like mention of like sexuality or their putting in terms of service that prohibit people from having a conversation about the sex that they like or sex education always gets kind of lumped into that. And I think that is a kind of a particularly damaging, like, blunt instrument that is being used by tech companies to prevent their liability without kind of realizing the impact. You see that with shadow banning, especially on Twitter, which I think has a huge, huge problem with helping sex worker communities organize and keep each other safe.
So I want to get into the sex education aspect of this a little bit. You know, I think porn, a lot of the time, especially for young boys and then, you know, girls as they get older as well, porn is sex education. You know, that's how a lot of people learn about sex. From your perspective as someone in the industry, how do you think parents should educate their kids about porn and about sexuality, and how can they deliver it in a sex positive way?
Well, a couple things. I think adult entertainment has become kind of a de facto sex education for people, which it was never intended to be. It's intended to be a fantasy entertainment product. And I think that is, I think that's a large fault on our kind of educational system, that we are unable to really come to the table and provide comprehensive sex education that is consent-based, that is pleasure-based, that is not just about biological reproduction. And it's, you know, porn gets thrown under the bus a lot of times for its depictions of sexuality not being along educational lines, which is a little bit like asking action movies to be responsible for gun safety. And the way that, like, we are in a large kind of denial about what sort of education we're going to provide for our young people in this country leads them to find other things that may not be for that intended purpose to fill those educational needs, right? So, you know, as a parent and as somebody who, you know, will have to have the conversation and many conversations, I think part of the problem. I think people think of there being like one conversation about sex and sexuality.
Birds and the bees talk.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think for any parent, like, you have to kind of like meet your child where they're at. You know, developmentally, there will be questions that will your children will have, like, and I think to kind of, you know, approach that kind of curiosity with like an understanding of kind of like seeking education and seeking knowledge. I think there's a huge also kind of a gap in our education system about media literacy and kind of recognizing adult content as a fantasy product. And, you know, if we're in the world, because I get this kind of question a lot when people find out that I'm a parent. People want to know if they want to know, like, how I plan to have the conversation about sex work and about adult entertainment. They also often ask of, like, how would you feel if your child chose to do sex work? You know, I think with these questions, like, we often kind of forget that, like, you don't really know how your child is going to kind of form opinions. You know, you can kind of guide them. You can kind of provide a kind of a framework of, you know, being honest and talking about sexuality in the context of where they're at developmentally.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, like, there is kind of a self-exploration that is going to happen. That happens with all adults.
Right.
You know, there's a time where they kind of figure out, you know, what that kind of means within themselves and find their own truth within that.
So I think we're going to wrap up here in a few minutes, but is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners or where they can find you on the internet?
I think it's pretty easy to find me on the internet. You can Google search, you know, Mickey Mod. But, you know, I do think when we kind of talk about ethical porn, I think one of the things I wanted to say is that there are a lot of places that, like, people just may not know about to kind of find. You know, I think for a lot of varying audiences, like pinkandwhite.com has like really great resources for chambers. If you want to see something that is just kind of like visually stunning and like different, there are a lot of people out there who are doing fantastic work in adult entertainment. And get off the tube sites, find your favorite performers. They're out there on Twitter. Support them directly. Tip them. Buy their content. You know, the porn that you want to see is out there and it already exists. We just kind of have a visibility problem.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me. I really enjoyed this.
Cool. Thank you for having me.